welcome to the Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Powell. Supporting the warfighter across the lines of supply has stayed consistent throughout the history of the Quartermaster Corps. It is the oldest logistics branch that was founded on June 16, 1775. If you haven't yet, I highly suggest you check out Episode 8, 250 Years of the Quartermaster Corps, and Episode 9, 250 Years of Beans to Bullets, where we discuss both the history of the Quartermaster Corps and the overall history of the sustainment operations. And while technology has changed and improved the efficiency at which the Quartermaster Corps can provide support, the basis has always been beans and bullets. Many listeners can attest to hearing that phrase numerous times throughout their careers and probably have read some books about that concept. However, today we're going to expand upon the concept of beans and bullets and add on to it. As the Quartermaster Corps is adapting to new advancements in technology, the focus on the future of energy has become a critical priority. Thus, to fully support the force, it is now beans, bullets, and batteries. And to walk us through this concept, I have with me today the current Quartermaster Commandant, Colonel Kevin Agnes. Colonel Kevin Agnes serves as the 60th Quartermaster Commandant. He commissioned through the University of Washington Army ROTC program in 1999. He has served in units throughout the world, including the 173rd Airborne Brigade in Italy, where he participated in Operations Northern Watch and Iraqi Freedom with the airborne assault into northern Iraq. He's also served with the 82nd Airborne Division, the Pentagon, 2nd Striker Brigade Combat Team, 2nd SFAB, the 4th Sustainment Division, 3rd Armor Corps, and DLA. Colonel Agnes' military education ranges from the Infantry Officer Basic Course through the Senior Service College. His civilian education includes a Master of Business Science in Logistics and Supply Chain Management from the University of Kansas and a Master of Supply and National Resource Strategy from the Eisenhower School of National Security and Resource Strategy. For his complete bio, be sure to check out the Quartermaster Corps' website found in the show notes. I'm so excited to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Garrett, I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity not only to serve as the Army's 60th Quartermaster Commandant, but to talk about this specific topic in today's contemporary operating environment.
So, sir, just once again, thank you for coming out here today, taking the time to really walk our audience through the importance of the future of energy, really how batteries are going to play into that. So, first of all, can we just get into talking about, like, what is the future of energy for the Army?
So, put simply, energy is combat power. And from my foxhole, it's going to require us to reframe the future of military sustainment. In today's rapidly evolving operational environment, the urgency of energy management as a strategic capability can absolutely not be overstated. As the Quartermaster Commandant, as you stated a few minutes ago, I'm the proponent for fuel storage and distribution. And I've seen firsthand how emerging technologies and shifting requirements do demand a more integrated, agile, and forward-thinking approach to energy management. From my perspective, with all things transformation, we're at a critical juncture. If we allow batteries and energy solutions to develop in isolation, we risk fragmenting our force with an incompatible approach or incompatible systems. This degrades interoperability and, frankly, could compromise operational endurance. From my foxhole, the time is now.
So with that, you know, so how is energy going to now become a strategic capability?
So like I said on the front end, energy is combat power. Put frankly, it's not just fuel. Every mission, whether it's a tactical maneuver, cyber operation, or even a humanitarian response, it requires energy. And without it, vehicles stall, communications are disrupted, and weapon systems go dark. In contested environments where resupply is uncertain and supply lines are vulnerable, energy becomes the critical enabler of endurance, flexibility, and our own survivability. We must reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. We've got to increase our battery's energy density, and we've got to innovate energy management and refine our approach to how we employ the energy that we have. Tactical electrical power capabilities must be resilient, scalable, and adaptable to support mission-critical systems across widely dispersed units operating in relatively austere environments.
So can you describe more just energy as, like, you know, how really the Army defines energy, like, for the simplest of terms?
So in its most basic terms, energy is endurance. And what I mean when I say that. So historically, we've thought of diesel fuel or JP8 as endurance. And you know, when a tank's gas tank is full, it has a certain amount of operating time or a certain amount of endurance. We're going to translate this concept is from that fuel tank to the fuel tank and the batteries on board. Or to pull that thread, all the batteries in the organic systems on that tank that aren't powered by the tank itself.
And that's just evolved through time. Because, I mean, when the Quartermaster Corps first started, it was, are the horses, the oxen, and everything that's pulling, what is that's going to be their energy? How far can they move? Because we didn't have combustion engines at that time. So it's interesting to see just as we advance in technology, how our concept of energy changes and what we need to do to support that. So kind of on that, like I started this with, as the old saying goes, from beans to bullets. But now we're really just adding batteries into the mix. Now, I know they've been there for some time now, but we're kind of making that more of a focus. So can you elaborate to the audience this focus of adding batteries?
Yeah, absolutely. For my Foxhole, batteries are the new ammunition. And just to pull the thread on the fuel comment a second ago, Admiral Chester Nimitz said back in World War II that winning the war is a matter of beans, bullets, and oil. Today, I submit to you that beans, bullets, and batteries are the essential elements for achieving military success. Batteries are ubiquitous. They power everything from drones to hybrid vehicles to soldier-worn gear and even our command posts. They sustain our platforms, our sensors, our communications, and they even impact our mobility. During a deployment that I had with 2nd SFAB in 2019 as a dismounted advisor in the greater Kabul area, I realized that I carried more than 5 different batteries. These are radio batteries, night vision batteries, weapon sight batteries. It amounted to over 12 pounds of my individual soldier load. And the unfortunate thing is that my operational endurance as a dismounted advisor was really limited to 24 to 36 hours. And it was only through that experience that really triggered me to think differently or underscore the critical truth, that effective energy management is as vital as ammunition management. From this more holistic perspective, as we take a step back from what we talked about a minute ago, fuel to energy management, we've got to train our warfighters in the tactical, operational, and strategic aspects of battery and energy management. The training has got to encompass things like secure storage, responsible disposal, resilient supply chains, and awareness of evolving regulations, and even cyber vulnerabilities of some of the batteries that are out there. Collectively, but especially as the Commandant, we've got to collaborate with industry to develop these scalable, interoperable solutions that help meet current and emerging future demands.
So when it comes to, like you'd mentioned before, how getting away some with fossil fuel, you'd mentioned with the quote, but hey, it's beans, bullets, and oil. And now we're looking at beans, bullets, and batteries. So is the batteries looking to more replace the focus on fuel as being the main avenue of energy?
Yeah, so maybe at some point, right, batteries will be a replacement to fossil fuels or hydrocarbons. I don't think we're there right now, technology-wise. But if I could put 15 gallons of fuel in a platform that has a hybrid drive that's organic, and the 15 gallons of fuel help charge the batteries that are organic to that respective platform, and its endurance is just as long or longer than a similar vehicle that I put 50 gallons of fuel in, now we're starting to enter trade space. And that trade space is really associated with energy density. And so the energy density of fossil fuels like diesel compared to the energy density of a lithium-ion battery or the energy density associated with a hydrogen fuel system is completely different. And so the departure from hydrocarbons all the way to the far end of the spectrum of a micro nuclear reactor is a significant positive step. It's a step in the direction that promotes some degree of energy autonomy. And so we can, through technology and an innovative approach to energy management and battery employment, really promote reach, endurance, and freedom of action for those that we support.
I mean, of course, because then if you can reduce the amount of supplies that have to be pushed forward, especially when it comes to fuel, I mean, that's really going to extend your operational reach. So do you envision a time where units would be able to be self-reliant, be able to produce their own energy then?
I would love to say we're there. And what I recall is when Emmett Doc Brown from like Back to the Future first one showed up in the DeLorean with the fusion processor on the back of the DeLorean. And he literally picked up trash out of the trash can to fire and power that platform. we're not there today. That's not to say we won't be there at some point, but like that is kind of my vision in terms of the portfolio.
Yeah, and I think that's really the core of like getting after this. The future of energy is if a unit could be self-sufficient, producing. I mean, you can look into it when it comes to nuclear or something where it could become more self-sufficient. We're not pushing supplies so much forward. We can focus on other classes of supplies.
Yeah, so part of that requires a creative and innovative approach, and right, and a lot of us that have been around the military for a couple of years. You think of energy as a very linear approach, meaning like, hey, we get bulk fuel into a theater, and then that bulk fuel kind of at the wholesale level is broken out into large quantities. I'm talking thousands of gallons that are moving from, you know, a core area to a division area to a brigade area to a battalion squadron, you name it. My challenge in Charter with industry partners is to think differently about this. Hey, how could we harvest energy at the point of need? Or said another way, how could we scavenge energy at the point of need? And so that really requires a multimodal strategy to get beyond the traditional, very linear paradigm of how hydrocarbons flow on the battlefield. One example is a piezoelectric system. And so a piezoelectric system, some of you may have the watch that winds itself when you move, is a good example of piezoelectric systems. Harnessing energy from motion and vibration. This is something that's ideal for vehicles, for foot traffic, for machinery. So imagine this, right? The individual soldier is executing dismounted maneuver and charging his or her soldier load. Another one, and we're kind of aware of it, are things like photovoltaic systems. And so these are solar panels or flexible solar fabrics that capture energy by converting sunlight into usable power. Now, I'm not just talking the traditional panels that you see on like the top of an RV or outside of large solar fields, like outside of the National Training Center. I'm talking about actual cloth, like part of a soldier's uniform that could capture solar energy in conjunction with daily operations. Another example might be thermoelectric systems where we extract energy from temperature differentials. That could be the temperature differential from an internal combustion engine running, right? So we capture all that heat that comes off of the engine and transition it into electricity. Again, just a way of thinking about it a little bit different.
I think those are all great examples of thinking about energy differently. And think about your example you brought up earlier when you had five different batteries on you to power all this. You said, was it 36 hours of operational time? Like, just to have that capability so you could recharge your batteries on the move, what a difference that's going to make, especially when you're going to be, if you want to focus on small unit tactics, where this unit's going to go out, they're going to be operating isolated, they're not going to have to worry about a resupply. They can be recharging their gear while they move, and what the advantage that provides in the battlefield. And then something, but especially when it comes to batteries, because I've been personally kind of reviewing a ton of actually historical articles right now from the sustainment community. I mean, all the way back to the 70s, and I know even prior to that, just the concept of battery management has always been discussed from the beginning of utilizing batteries. But yet, I've always seen this as something where so many different units can struggle with this when it comes to effective battery management. So from everything we've learned, what advice can you really provide to the community out there when it comes to setting up an effective battery management program?
Yeah, Garrett, that's a good question. And so I would, looking through a sustainment lens, just encourage everyone, when it comes to batteries and energy, it's pretty fundamental, but can get complicated very quickly. But the first thing is you have to know your requirement and you have to conduct your sustainment prep of the battlefield. Said a different way, in terms of energy, you have to know your requirement, your capability to meet that requirement, identify where there might be power-based or energy-based shortfalls, and then figure out your mitigation strategy. Said another way, you got to get into the math problem here. This is not taking a wooden dipstick and putting it in the top of a Hemet tanker and saying, I have X number of gallons, I'm good. But really crosswalking that volume of fuel, in this case, with your operational requirement. Or said differently, you know, in an environment with electromagnetic platforms and drones and radios, getting into the math problem associated with what is the amount of energy? And then how long do you need that energy? Is it one day? Is it 2 days? Is it a constant period over time? Or are there spikes, peaks and valleys associated with what and where you need that energy for?
So when it comes to like, especially I guess on the mechanics or maintainer side of it, you know, you go with the, always, you know, walk into a motor pool, there's this palace of batteries just sitting there. Some are on charter. Some are just, you know, maybe just completely dead. When it comes to stuff, especially stuff like that, is there, I know there's a ton of battery, different types and stuff, not to get into that discussion because that can get really technical, but just how can, like, as a maintainer, better manage it? Because when it comes to, like, keeping batteries alive.
Yeah, that's another good question. And, you know, we can keep it simple. Batteries are a lot like soldiers, right? They don't necessarily operate or do well in extreme cold or extreme heat unless we put together or assemble prudent measures to make sure that they do. So in this case, you know, whether it's in the Arctic or the jungle, we have to explore and test the viability and survivability of batteries. We got to know when and where they're going to be effective, and we have to know when our endurance might be disrupted. And there is emerging technologies right now today with lithium ion cells that survive or tend to survive better in the Arctic environment, you know, than the batteries that they've used of old. But we've got to find creative ways, just like we do with soldiers, to mitigate the effects the environment has on our batteries to extend our endurance.
And I know that from firsthand experience, where having operated in the Arctic, it is such a unique environment because just the weather will kill everything. I know on the civilian side, like, we have our battery warm, like the little battery warmers in your vehicles. Don't know if that's an option for when you're operating up there, just little key things. Like, I know a lot of our vehicles are winterized up there, but there's always new things you can do. Cause like you said, like, batteries can die so quickly. Especially in the cold, and I know you get into the extreme heat, that can be another thing, or for even the wet conditions of the jungle. When it comes to just getting through these different austere environments, is there going to be a one-size-fits-all battery? Because I know you mentioned some lithium thing there, but is there going to be, hey, this battery is designed for this element, this one's for this environment, or can we have one-size-fits-all?
Yeah, I think the Army would love a one-size-fits-all, right? The thing that can survive at this extremely low temperature and the thing that can survive at this extremely high temperature. From a technology perspective, we're not there yet. And frankly, where industry has had some successes, it would be so expensive for us to field, you know, across the force, it's probably not a good return on the associated investment. So it speaks back to sustainment prep of the OE. It speaks to IPB, right? And so we talk all the time about the effects that weather and terrain will have on the soldier. You have to incorporate and understand the effects that weather and terrain have on your batteries, right? And not knowing that, not getting into the hard math, will have a direct impact on the endurance of your respective formation.
So what all effect will this have, like, batteries, the future of energy that we're talking about? Like, what is this all going to have when it comes to large-scale combat operations?
Yeah, this has a huge effect and implications in terms of large-scale combat operations. And fortunately, innovation is on our side. The Army's already moving out. Great initiatives like Transformation and Contact, they're already deploying autonomous microgrids, solar-powered command posts, and even some hybrid vehicles. Ongoing prototyping and testing, shaping the energy paradigm, and absolutely demonstrating our commitment to transform. Some platforms you may have heard of, it, like the Universal Power Gateway, the Medium Modular Equipment Transport Trailer, and even human-machine integrated formations, they're driving demand-centric solutions that prioritize a couple things for batteries: interoperability, simplicity, transportability, and then sustainability. And as we look at these new and different systems, I do need to remind the group that we also have to aim to reduce the variety and quantity of batteries that are across our formations while increasing the capability and the endurance of each. To be innovative in this approach informed by the LESCO environment, we've got to move beyond the limitations of our traditional battery systems and embrace a decentralized adaptive model of harvesting, like I talked about a minute ago, or scavenging another way. Collectively, it's that kind of aggressive approach, right? The traditional linear flow of fossil fuels or hydrocarbons, piezoelectric systems, photovoltaic systems, thermoelectric systems, and even electromagnetic systems, the ability to harvest energy right at the point of requirement, to include, like the example I offered, a soldier that's walking around and charging his or her radio, is the place where we need to be. And we get there, and that is game-changing for a distributed force operating in support of large-scale ground combat ops.
I think you bring up a good point, especially when it comes to, like, when it comes to different batteries, like, trying to get more, I would say, batteries are more interchangeable, right? This battery can function and power different systems, so you don't have a million different types of batteries, because one that's going to clog up the supply chain, I know if we can all get to more just a common battery or something that's more usable across platforms, I think it's going to really help out. Now, when it comes to this focus with energy, when we're in this large-scale combat environment and getting after really with batteries and just more that technological age, how does the, when it comes to like EMPs and stuff like that, that could kind of take out some of the cup when it comes to electronics, does that play into a factor at all when it comes to this operational energy or batteries?
Yeah, I mean, it could. It absolutely could. You know, speaking back to my experience in Afghanistan, the reason I was carrying five different kinds of batteries is because it was for five different systems, right? Interoperability is key. And there are folks at DEVCOM, Soldier Center, and C5ISR that are trying to wickedly attack this problem set, right? Where you have maybe a family of radios, but they can all operate off of the same common battery. The same common battery then speaks to the same kind of charger or the same kind of input requirement. And so then we create through this commonality, this interoperability, more of a self-sustained ecosystem that accounts for infrastructure, gear, and our platforms itself. From my perspective, like logistics perspective, this could reduce logistics burdens, enhance mobility, ensures mission continuity, especially in some of the degraded environments like an EW type environment.
So when it comes to the future of energy and just this increased use of batteries that we've been talking about today, you know, what is this? What would you say is a takeaway for our audience and how they should conduct when it comes to planning operations going forward?
Yeah, so that requires energy literacy. So you got to get into the details well beyond what we're even talking about today. Commanders and leaders have to embrace energy as an enabler, a strategic enabler. This is planning, training, and executing energy considerations in really all facets of what we're doing at every single echelon. Energy literacy can no longer be this niche capability or competency that our fuelers execute, you know, down with the bulk fuel assets. It's got to be a foundational element of warfighting proficiency, and it's got to be tied or understood as an element of our mission success. Soldiers, you and I, right? We innately understand how to manage our power for our individual phones. It might go through every single morning. Hey, do I need to bring an external power supplier or do I need to bring a charger? Do I have access to a charger, you know, in the office or wherever I'm going for the day? We go through that mental model inherently, you know, having grown up with or at least have a generation of soldiers with cell phones. I would submit to you that we've got to do that operationally. And so now it's not just that one battery, but going back to my Afghan experience, right? It's one cell phone. It's a second cell phone. It's this radio. It's this radio. It's this night vision device. It's this site. This broad-based understanding, it's essential for achieving an energy dominance. We absolutely have to look at it that way as an element of planning, not just an afterthought thought as we're physically walking out of the door of our house to get in our car.
Yeah, and I think especially when it comes to on the planning side, when it comes to setting up your log stat, now this is just going to be another aspect that will need added on to when you set up reports. It's like what maybe a category just for batteries. Yeah. Like what is your battery charge at? Like, do you have batteries that are completely dead and down? Do you need a replacement of those? Or where's your charge status? So that could be, as we go through and start, when it comes to planning operations for LISCO, that could be something that would need added into a unit's log stat. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. In fact, you know, we're kind of toying around with the idea of expanding class 3 to class energy, right? So much broader than just the POL type products. From my perspective, energy data is mission data. It's got to be considered as such. And a holistic approach to this and associated energy management is going to change the paradigm. From a data management perspective, energy alone has the ability to provide critical insights into our endurance. But to do that, we've got to track the availability, the production, the distribution, and the consumption of energy at echelon. There are potential to have a suite of sensor networks, metering systems, and even analytics that can help commanders at echelon visualize risks and their anticipated needs, how they could optimize the energy they're consuming at echelon, you know, peaks and valleys in terms of utilizations or surge windows, to set conditions to achieve mission objectives. But this requires a shift in thought, right? It's not just, you know, JP8 that's going to go forward and charge the battery. Sometimes I've got to replace the entire battery cell. So it's a little different. I would submit to you, you know, in terms of energy literacy, And advice I would have for the sustainment community, like, we've got to get past the bank of generators and the tuck battle drills that we all grew up with, right? That's just not good enough. We've got to think a lot bigger. To fight, sustain, and win in large-scale combat operations, supported by emerging technology that we see across the force, like drones and EW systems, soldiers and leaders have to know the energy requirements, and not just right now, but over the course of a 24-hour period, a 48-hour period, 72-hour, hell, even 96 hours to really get after promoting endurance for their respective mission objectives.
So you're saying not walking past a sea of generators in the talk then?
No.
Because I know that's just a large rumble, so to speak. But one thing you said is neat. So you guys are toying around the concept of expanding Class 3 then?
Yeah, so more holistically, like, so Class 3 petroleum products, I'll liken that to the department here at the Quartermaster School. So for years, we've had the Petroleum and Water Department. And I challenged them very recently, based on the discussion we're having today, hey, we probably need to think about this differently. Because if we are still chasing hundreds of thousands of gallons of JP-8 in 10 years or 15 years, we have probably not optimized our force, especially as right now, today, you know, platforms like drones with batteries are moving into formations rapidly. And so it's not necessarily more fuel or more generators that are really going to enable endurance. It's getting an exquisite understanding of what battery is required to power that drone. How do we recharge the battery for that drone? And how do we prolong the associated endurance for mission success?
No, and I think that's a great way to look at it as we kind of start to wrap up our conversation today is, you know, what battery is it going to be? Like, how are you going to charge? How long is it going to last for? So these are all things that the community out there really needs to start thinking about when it comes to when these equipment comes to your formation. You know, as you said, a lot of drones, a lot of autonomous equipment is arriving at units right now. Like, you start getting to that mindset. So out of everything we've talked about today, when it comes to the future of energy, batteries and everything, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to highlight to the community?
No, I mean, great discussion, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I would just offer for the collective group energy dominance. And so collectively, the charter for me is clear. Joint forces need the energy to fight and win in contested environments, period. That's not up for negotiation. Energy dominance requires transitioning from the traditional fuels that we talked about today to hybrid sources, to building and investing in resilient supply chain, and establishing really enterprise-wide standards and visibility of what's out there. From my foxhole, energy dominance enables mission dominance. It's that clear. Now is the time to view energy not just as a logistical consideration, but as a foundational strategic capability. This foundational capability has got to inform our force design, our operational planning, and then our force employment. Collectively, we have to do this. We have to power this evolution together. Again, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, thank you, sir. And just, I know you've had a long history or just career thus far. You've had just a lot of unique opportunities. Just outside of just batteries and energies, or any advice do you have for the sustainment community just from your years of service?
How much time do we have?
We could be here all day, but.
So I've been blessed and honored to serve with just remarkable folks throughout my career. The only thing I would offer to the group is to make it count and to be passionate about what you do. Be passionate about those you serve and to realize that, you know, when it comes to sustainment or just being a soldier in general, the things that we do impact real people. And so passion should carry you through the day and set conditions for us not only to fight, but to win.
Thank you for that, sir. And this has been a really great conversation today. We got a lot of some technical aspects when it comes to energy, but our overall, this was a great opportunity just to inform the community on the way ahead. So where can people find you at if they have any additional follow-up questions or, you know, as we always say, cards and letters, yeah. If they want to be able to provide some more follow-up questions, just, or maybe some things that they're seeing in the field from them operating with new batteries or such.
So as the Army's 60th Quartermaster Commandant, I always encourage folks to put rocks in my rucksack. And so if you've got questions related to energy literacy, batteries, please email me. If you don't want to work with me directly, or you want to get to the technical level first, please contact Mr. Reed Hudgens, who is our Petroleum, Water, and Energy Department Head here at the Quartermaster School.
But I want to thank you, sir, for taking the time to come in today and just really providing our listeners with an understanding of the future of energy and just the importance of batteries in this new energy age. I know there is so much more to discuss in this topic as technology is evolving just as a lightning fast speed. And the Army Sustained Professional Bulletin has already published a few articles on the future of operational energy. So anyone out there, if you wish to contribute to this dialogue, then be sure to submit an article to the journal so we can continue the conversation to increase our lethality with all this new cutting edge information from the field. I'm here to help you with the writing process, so please reach out to me if you need any assistance. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.